Didn't write a lot.
Judiciary come to order. Today is March 25th, 2009. First item on the agenda is a public hearing.
Thank you.
On Senate Bill 311A. And I'd like to call up
Chair.
Yeah, the former chair. Richard Lane, Steve Statham, Bill Blair, and Mr. McPherson these days.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Greg McPherson, former state representative from House District 38 and formerly the co-chair of the Joint Task Force on the Oregon Tort Claims Act. And I'll just make some introductory remarks here and then turn it over to some key players from stakeholders who groups that served on the task force along with a number of you and several other legislators. We had a pretty good, I think, balance of perspectives. Just to frame the issue, the subject of the Oregon Tort Claims Act, I think, puts into focus one of the sort of key tensions we have in Oregon, which is our commitment to providing a remedy to injured parties, and at the same time, to preserve public budgets so that they can deliver the essential services that Oregonians depend on. We had a policy in place for many years under our Tort Claims Act of capping the liability of public entities for actions that the entity takes and are taken in its name in order to preserve those budgets. But I think by common consensus, the limits that are provided under the Act today are just not a sufficient remedy for injured Oregonians. And so the task force rolled up its sleeves to deal with this situation. Now, generally, an economic downturn would not be the time you'd want to take up an issue like this. You'd rather do it when the budgets are a little stronger than we have now. But it was, I think, we were forced to engage this issue by the holding of the Oregon Supreme Court in the Clark v. OHSU case here a little over a year ago, which held that our Tort Claims Act is unconstitutional under the Remedies Clause of the Oregon Constitution as applied to a particular set of facts in which there were lifetime medical costs that were faced by an OHSU patient exceeding $10 million. And the $200,000 limit on liability under our Tort Claims Act was, as determined by the Oregon Supreme Court, not a sufficient substitute remedy. So we had to take that issue on, and we had to because, particularly in my view, our insurance system doesn't react well to uncertainty, and the uncertainty created by that holding that on any claim that might be brought forward against a public entity that the limit might be thrown out or held unconstitutional as applied to that particular set of facts put our public entities in a position where their insurers would necessarily assume the worst. It's in the nature of insurers to do that. And so the state and our public jurisdictions were facing higher costs than they really should in a more settled kind of environment in which people can rely on certain limits for most claims. And so what the recommendation from our task force is to dramatically increase the stated limits in the Tort Claims Act from $200,000 per claim to $1.5 million with certain increases above that and a higher limit applicable to a per occurrence limit that is in the law. And to, at the same time, eliminate the distinction between economic and non-economic damages, which has been a complicating aspect of tort law all along. And with that simplified kind of playing field, we're hopeful that we will create, with your approval of this legislation, the environment in which there is certainty in which the players can understand what the cost of a risk ought to be in the state. So with those introductory comments, I could either take questions now myself or we could pass it off to others here to describe their involvement.
Why don't we go ahead and have the panel have a lot of questions.
That's right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Steve Statham, Executive Vice President of OHSU. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. The 2007 Supreme Court decision that former Representative McPherson referred to that effectively eliminated the tort cap or caused these questions was a major setback for public services throughout Oregon. public resources that were historically used to pay for public services had to be used to pay for liability coverage. The court ruling was much larger than OHSU or just medical malpractice. It did affect all public entities in Oregon and all kinds of public services. Specifically, it meant that all public entities immediately moved into an uncapped or potentially uncapped environment. A single mistake could imperil a public agency, or one large judgment could potentially bankrupt a small community. For OHSU specifically, the impact was immediate. In February of 2008, as a result of higher insurance costs and the need for additional reserves, OHSU had no choice but to cut $20 million per year out of its budget. OHSU is currently estimating that if the Oregon Tort Cap Task Force proposal is adopted, the university could save approximately $12.5 million per year in insurance and reserve costs. And given the current economic challenges, this relief would help reduce our current deficit. Senate Bill 311A represents the thoughtful work of the Interim Tort Cap Task Force, which was charged with crafting recommendations for the 2009 legislature. After studying the issues related to the Oregon Tort Claims Act, the task force recommended new tort cap limits for state and local government entities. The task force proposal represents the efforts of participants from the state, local governments, OHSU, and the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. This recommendation increases the likelihood that an injured party is more fully compensated for his or her injuries, protects the constitutional right identified in Clark in most cases, and allows government entities to maintain an appropriate amount of insurance for future claims. OHSU believes it is essential that a limitation on liability be in place for public bodies, but any new tort cap solution must strike a fair balance between ensuring that adequate resources are available for Oregonians who need public services and also compensating injured claimants. We also believe the current $200,000 cap, which has been ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, is too low and should be raised, and we have testified to that in past legislative sessions. Additionally, OHSU believes that any new cap proposal should apply to all claims against all public bodies, regardless of the type of service provider or the cause or type of the injury. A child who suffers brain damage from child abuse inflicted in a negligent foster care placement should have the same rights of recovery equivalent to a child who suffers brain damage in a school bus accident or in a neurosurgery procedure. What Senate Bill 311A proposes is a tort cap for state government, including OHSU, at a per-claim limit of $1.5 million plus an additional $100,000 per year starting July 1, 2010, until reaching $2 million on July 1, 2014, and then a per-occurrence limit for claims against state entities, including OHSU, of $3 million, also escalating, but $200,000 per year, until $4 million is reached on July 1, 2014. The A. Engross bill clarified that these limits are without respect to other caps, such as on statutory torts. The tort cap for all other governmental entities, local public bodies, is $500,000 per claim and $1 million per occurrence with similar escalations. I think, and Mr. Blair may speak to those. Other modifications to the bill include increase in the limits on claims for property damage claims against state and local public bodies at $100,000 per claim and $500,000 per occurrence. There is no distinction in the bill between economic and non-economic damages. And the effective date for state government, including OHSU, for the bill is July 1, 2009, with the limits covering injuries that occurred on or after December 28, 2007, the date of the Clark decision. The effective date for local public bodies is July 1, 2009 also, but with the limits covering injuries that occurred on or after that date. There is a provision for expedited review to the Supreme Court for constitutional challenges to the new limits for the reason that former Representative McPherson referred to. Getting certainty when issues are raised is important. And each July 1, starting in 2015, the tort caps will be adjusted by the Consumer Price Index, but limited to no more than 3% per year. And previously, the Tort Claims Act did not have any sort of inflation index or adjustment, which is part of the reason we got to this point 30 years later. There is an emergency clause, and the legislature is to revisit these tort cap and tort liability issues in 2015. And with that, I'll turn my time over to Mr. Lane and Mr. Blair, but I would also request the committee approve the Dash 10 amendments, which confirm that OHSU and the state of Oregon continue to have responsibility for their own insurance programs, indemnity and defense obligations. There were some technical glitches, as I understand it, in the drafting that the Dash 10 amendments address, as well as some other amendments that other witnesses may speak to. I'll be glad to answer questions. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bill Blair, and I'm a senior assistant county counsel for Washington County. For the last 30 years or so, I have been basically doing self-insured representation for self-insured public bodies, first the city of Salem for 20-some years, and now for Washington County. Over those years, I've also had the opportunity to participate in various ways in the legislative process by which changes to the Tort Claims Act have been adopted back in the mid-70s when the limits were last set at where they are today. It was part of that the process that went through resulting in that particular legislation. And in those days, we were in the state of Oregon in a situation very similar to what we are now. There was a very tight insurance market produced because of situation in the economy. And because of a tight market, it became difficult, if not impossible, for most local public bodies to find insurance, certainly at a reasonable premium. The League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties created its own task force to study the problem, come up with recommendations. Part of that was legislative, and part of it resulted in an entity called City-County Insurance Services, which is a creature of the League and the Association, and provides a self-insurance pool that now handles the risk for most Oregon cities and counties. The remainder are either self-insured or they have found insurance elsewhere. But most of Oregon's counties and most of Oregon cities are insured, if you want to call it that, through CIS. The thing we learned back in those days was that in order to effectively manage your risk, you need predictability and stability. And that was the original purpose of the Tort Claims Act. Because government, whether it be the state or whether it be a city or county, cannot, like General Motors, stop making Corvairs when Ralph Nader says that they are unsafe at any speed, we still have to provide fire protection and police service and building inspections and all of the other things that cities, counties, and other local governments, districts, and schools do. And in Oregon, we are constrained by a number of constitutional amendments that limit our ability to generate revenue through taxation. And so while our increase as a county, for example, heavily dependent on property tax as the primary source of revenue for our entity, while that may increase if at all at 3% a year, roughly, when the cost of claims increases, there is no way to charge that back to the consumer. In Washington County, we were self-insured completely up until October of 2008. When the Court of Appeals decision in Clark came down and we looked at the situation and said maybe we should get an excess insurance policy, we did that. It cost $185,000 to get a policy that provided a $500,000 deductible and $2 million worth of coverage. Always our concern, and that certainly is the concern of the state and many other public entities, is the federal exposure. And we can't do a thing about that through the Oregon Tort Claims Act. If we get sued in federal court for violating somebody's constitutional rights, there is no cap. And that's why a lot of local governments and I'm sure the state also, plans for the possibility of higher awards, not because we're going to get them in state court, but because they're going to happen in federal court. In fact, in state court, most, and when I say most, we were really hard-pressed in gathering information for the task force to come up with more than a literal handful of claims statewide involving local government where the claim would have exceeded the $200,000 cap that now exists under the Tort Claims Act. Most claims are settled or they're adjudicated for under that amount. We also looked at what it would cost to raise the limits. It is not an exact science, but the bottom line is that to go from the $500,000 that we are proposing as there is proposed in this bill as a per claimant limit under the new law, to go from there up to the $1.5 million that is the tier one limit for the state and Oregon Health Sciences University would reasonably result in about a 24% increase in the total cost of risk for local governments. And this was something that we looked at and said we can't afford, because of that situation. We did, I will say, agree to, but we do recommend the two-tier limit that you see in Senate Bill 311. We emphasize that Senate Bill 311 is not going to fix Clark versus OHSU. In fact, in Clark versus OHSU, what the Oregon Supreme Court said was the limits are constitutional as to local government, state government, any public body. The $200,000 limit under the current law is constitutional as to those public bodies. It's not constitutional as to the employee or the agent of a public body. And as long as the public body is obligated to indemnify and defend its employees, in practice, the limits are open to question. But what the court also said is that it is a as applied or a case-by-case basis. In other words, not every case, in not every case is the limit unconstitutional, even as to the employee. So what we were hoping and what we believe this bill does is, as to local governments and as to the state and OHSU, and the raise of limits that you see in the bill will eliminate most of the Clark-type challenges. And as Mr. Statham indicated, where there is a Clark-type challenge, that can be speedily moved up to the Oregon Supreme Court for resolution. We've reviewed the A-10 and A-11 amendments and believe they add to the bill and support them. And with that, I'll defer to any questions that you might have after Mr. Lane's had an opportunity to speak.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Richard Lane. I'm an attorney with the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, and I am also one of the members of the Interim Tort Claims Task Force. I just wanted to take a brief moment and thank what was Chair McPherson and Senator Pruzanski for all of their work. You're getting sort of the abbreviated version, but President Chair Barker here and other elected officials worked for about a year. There were some public members, but the elected officials worked throughout the year at a number of hearings where there was an awful lot of testimony presented, and a lot of input was provided by a number of individuals from various interest groups and local counties and state interests that ended up providing the framework for what you see now in front of you, Senate Bill 311A engrossed. The bill is a necessary fix both to Clark and even without Clark, what everybody acknowledges was a governmental limit amount that had not kept up in any size, shape, or fashion over the years. It is a bill that improves the availability of a person injured as a result of a governmental tort to seek a remedy from the governmental entity. The dash 10 and dash 11, you know, the bill is 38 some odd pages. I see two amendments, the dash 10 and the dash 11. That's remarkable in itself. There's an awful lot of work that's been put into it. It's been vetted an awful lot. I think it's a good bill, and urge your passage and answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from the panel? Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the Washington State attorney, or Washington County attorney, explain to us how many counties are self-insured, and what you're describing as self-insured means that you're going to, the county has money to cover up to a certain point, and you're going to get insurance for that beyond that. So the reason I'm asking this is, I mean, we have a lot of counties in trouble. So, I mean, how, because of the timber payments and things like that. So, I see Mr. Snipes, and maybe later the other AOC is going to, or League of Oregon Cities or counties, going to weigh in. But how, explain that to me. Are the counties okay, and is this bill address those concerns?
Chair Barker, Representative Wisnant. The bill that you see before you, Senate Bill 311A, including the A10 and A11 amendments, are supported by the Association of Oregon Counties. I think I'm speaking correctly for Paul on that. And I've been working with their legislative committee. Washington County, Multnomah County,
Deschutes
to some degree, Lane to some degree, I believe, and Clackamas, are the self-insured counties. And by self-insured, what I mean is there is now for every county some kind of excess insurance in place. But by self-insurance, I mean a self-insured retention. In our case, for example, $500,000. That basically means that for 99 and 44 one-hundredths percent of claims, we're self-insured. It's going to be a claim paid out of a carefully established casualty fund established by the county with contributions adjusted annually by the magic formula that the money people use to assure that the fund is going to be fiscally sound, and those accounts, of course, are always audited annually by the county auditors. So the counties are not going to be faced with a bankrupt case, we believe, under Senate Bill 311A. We do believe that the impact is manageable because of that lower limit and the ability then to fund the risk by paying either an insurance premium to an insurance company, paying a contribution to City County Insurance Services, or putting money into the casualty fund of the county itself.
Is Mr. Snyder going to testify?
Yes.
Can't wait. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can be for either, excuse me, for any of you at the panel. Why is there a distinction between non-economic and economic damages here? No distinction.
Representative Olson, Chair Barker, members of the committee, I'll take the first shot at it and let my colleagues here address the question as well. The elimination of the previous existing law between non-economic and economic damages was intended to eliminate sort of the discrimination that occurs in a lot of cases. You may have a full-time employed household wage owner earner with a family of three and a wife and a mortgage, and if that individual is injured, has a huge economic loss associated with it. But by the same token, you can have the same injury suffered by either a young person, a child, an elderly person, And their loss is no less than the loss associated with the other person, but it's realized in other ways, which is why Oregon has long had a component of non-economic and economic damages. So the intent of the bill was to remove that artificial distinction that had been put into the Oregon Tort Claims Act. It's also believed that it will provide a more adequate remedy, using the words from Clark versus OHSU, if there is a subsequent constitutional analysis of the changes that we're proposing here.
I'll comment on that. It was not something that came out of the deliberations of the task force itself, but rather was part of a sort of a key development in the work on this issue that arose sort of midterm in our efforts when the two of the key stakeholders, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association and OHSU, came to terms on a compromise that resolved their issues, and that was one element in the compromise. And like a lot of compromises, each party gives up something that is important to the other party in order to be able to come to some middle ground. I would say this about the cases like Clark and the other cases that stretch at the upper limits of the existing Tort Claims Act. They tend to be medical cases. I mean, what we're really dealing with here is the inability of our country to deal effectively with medical costs, so that the cost of lifetime medical care has just grown astronomically and much faster than general inflation. And that's an economic damage. I mean, the cases that stretch the upper limits involve economic damages, and the documentation you can provide that lifetime medical care is just an extraordinary thing to provide to people. It's my belief that the economic, non-economic kind of distinction was a distraction from the larger issues that were going on in the Tort Claims Act, which is how do we provide an adequate remedy for those medical costs.
Chair Parker and Representative Olson, maybe a final counterpoint. Before knowing the result of negotiations between OHSU and the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, local governments, and I use that term very loosely, I was kind of the unofficial representative of local governments on the task force, had come up with some proposals of our own that, because of that, as what has been referred to as a key development, they didn't come to pass. But the idea of segregating and separately capping economic and non-economic damages has been in the Tort Claims Act since it was first adopted. It is so old that it shows up in the Act right now as special and general damages, which are it's the old language that I learned when I was in law school back in the time of the dinosaurs. And it's a concept that has been around in the law for a very long time for historical reasons that are totally inapplicable here. From our perspective, we thought that retaining that cap would be a good idea and was our proposal. And it is as a trade-off to that proposal that you see the lower tier of limits for local government, primarily because the exposure to non-economic damages is something that is not predictable and not stable. And so, again, as has been indicated, the result that you see before you involves a lot of work, a lot of talk, a lot of compromise, and is, we think, the best balance that could be struck at this time and place.
Mr. Chair, this is a follow-up question with
please.
I mean, from what I've done for research and studying in this area, there's clearly a difference for determining what the average settlement is between the two. I mean, non-economic seems to be considerably lower than that of what economic damages are. So you're lumping both together, so there's no distinction. I mean, is this going to set a precedent then for everything? because I see this could be a problem. I'm just want to throw it out there and know.
Sheriff Barker, Representative Olson, I would respond this way, that the recognize that we're dealing with a particular peculiar area of tort claims, which or torts, which is the limitations on the liability of public entities and their obligation to indemnify their employees and agents with respect to public activity. One of the things we decided as a task force is that that was what our charge was, and that we weren't going to try to take on the sort of the larger landscape of tort issues. There were some members of the task force who believed that that should have been part of the charge, but in order to try to get to a consensus, and we do have happily here a consensus bill, we had to not get distracted by things that were outside the area of the Oregon Tort Claims Act, which is the liability of public entities. And in order to get that consensus together, eliminating the distinction between economic and non-economic within those limits became a significant element of accomplishing that.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. Ralph Groner, Paul Snyder, and Chris Davey, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I said I'd be under 30 seconds, and I will. I have to testify in another committee. Asked me, I'd like to go on record, and this is one of what we call a counter for us. This is a very important piece of legislation to our union. To personalize it, when OHSU, those are my employees, have a large lawsuit that cost them a lot of money, it's my members who lose their jobs. When a county has a large job suit, if it's a city, special district, usually those are my members. So they lose the job. We want to compliment all of you who worked on this and the task force who worked on it. At least now we have something that's realistic, reasonable, and above all, certainty is put in place so that our members know that at least we're not going to lose 100 jobs, we may lose 10 or 15. So we appreciate the work that's been done on behalf of the employees, and I mean public employees in this state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, appearing also in support of Senate Bill 311. And I think the issues have been covered pretty well by the previous witnesses. I would just go back to the couple of points that were made in the dialogue previously, and that is to say that this bill is a result of several compromises on several different levels. And from the local government perspective, county perspective, other local governments, our agreement with respect to issues involving economic and non-economic damages, the distinction between the two has a direct relationship to the lower caps for local governments. It's a matter of what we can deliver in terms of damages in response to a situation that's offset by a loss of other services that the local governments provide. And let me see, Representative Wisnat asked about the financial circumstances of the counties generally. I would simply point directly to the Governor's Task Force on Forest Payments Issues that just concluded its work. It was co-chaired by Tim Nesbitt of the Governor's Office. We actually awarded him an honorary doctorate degree from County College. As a result of his work, he now knows more about counties than a lot of county people do. But the result of that task force report identifies the counties that are in really, really difficult circumstances. And it's It layers the different levels of counties in terms of the financial plights that they find themselves in. And there are a number of them, quite a significant number of them, that are in very difficult circumstances. So some of them are self-insured, some of them are not self-insured. Many of them use CIS, as Mr. Blair has indicated. But I would just bring us back to the trade-offs that were made. We think this bill is fair, it's doable, it's understandable, and it provides an appropriate balance all across the board in terms of balancing the delivery of services against the damages to individuals.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Chris Davey with Safe Corporation. I'm here just to speak to the Dash A10 amendments and the addition on line 10 where SAFE is specifically named in the bill. As a public body, SAFE is already subject to the Tort Claims Act, and by adding SAFE by name in the definition of state, confirms that tort claims against SAFE would be subject to the higher $1.5 million limit. Without that amendment, SAFE would actually fall paradoxically under the definition of a local public body, where we would be subject to the lower $500,000 limit. So we picked that up after the bill came out of the House, spoke with Senator Prezansky about that, realized that that was an oversight, and so this amendment just conforms to the intent of the task force and the original intent of the bill.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Chris Kautz and Deborah Fifield.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm Chris Kautz. I'm the Deputy Director at the Department of Administrative Services. We are here in support of Senate Bill 311. As has been indicated before by those that have testified, it provides certainty into Oregon's tort claim system for public bodies. And right now, for the 2009-2011 biennial budget, the amounts needed by state agencies and the risk charges that are included in their budgets will cover for the tort changes that are in this bill. There could be, as any given changes like this might bring on, increased costs in the future, but we are implementing strategies to manage claims in a better way to try to keep those charges at a lower level. And so we won't know that until future biennia out. Charges are based on historical claims history, and so not having much history currently, we don't know what this will mean for charges in the future, but we will certainly be able to track those as they come about.
Okay, thank you.
And I did bring Deborah Fifield here with me today. She's the state's risk manager in case you had any questions that I couldn't cover.
Do you have any questions from the panel?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm on the Ways and Means Subcommittee for Education. We're going through all the small agencies' budgets now, so they're covered by the state limit, too, but you're charging them for insurance, too, and that's based, you put this new factor in their budgets for the 2009-11. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you. Okay. Close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 311. We have two amendments that are before you that need to go in the bill today.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 10 and Dash 11 into 311, Senate Bill 311.
Representative Wisnant moves the Dash 10 and Dash 11 into Senate Bill 311. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Is there anybody like to discuss the bill prior to a vote? This bill has come out of the Senate. It was mentioned earlier. It was worked on over the past many months to get it to where it is.
Mr. Chair, I recommend the committee pass Senate Bill 311 as amended by Dash 10 and Dash 11 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnant moves Senate Bill 311 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Keeler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Whitman?
Aye.
Chair Brucker?
Aye. Motion carries. Yeah, we won't do this on consent. I'll be the chair on that. Don't do this on consent. Yeah. Okay, next we'll open a...
Not so much.
Good try.
Yeah. I can see it pushing.
Next we'll open a work session on House Bill 2304. Okay. We're committee stand at ease for a few minutes, please. call the committee back to order. We're going to take the last two items on the agenda off today's agenda, House Bill 2645 and House Bill 2536, to check on the fiscals of those two. And so I'll reopen a work session on House Bill 2304.
Mr. Chair? Go ahead.
Ms. Spilker.
Sorry, Council.
No. House Bill 2304 eliminates the requirement for a parent company to notify shareholders of a planned merger. There are now Dash 1 amendments, and perhaps Representative Barton would like to speak to them.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, you might recall the short form, or actually perhaps you prefer to forget this bill, and I kind of got worked up over it in particular. I then actually, with the proponents, negotiated the Dash 1 amendments. And I've been considering this bill a great deal, and if it's okay with you colleagues, I would actually prefer to move the original, and I do not plan to move the Dash 1 amendments.
Oh, you don't want to have to read and figure it out for yourself?
No, I don't want to.
What are the Dash 1s?
Perhaps Representative Barton would also like to.
Mr. Chair, I never again am I going to go up there during a work session. I made that mistake once before. I won't repeat the error. So currently, Oregon law, in order to basically do a short-form merger, you have to provide the minority shareholder notice 30 days before you actually do the merger. The Dash 1 amendments would shorten that time frame to 10 days notice. Oregon would join three other states that have a 10-day notice requirement. The original bill, as is, will take Oregon in line. I don't know if necessarily with the majority of states, but certainly with the majority of corporations, including New York and Delaware, for example.
Other questions? Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was struggling with this bill, and as I think about all the different mergers that happen in the corporate world, I rarely see any that result in increases in employment. And from the workers' perspective, I think having I haven't been convinced that there's a compelling reason to shorten this gap, except that it would be more convenient for companies that want to merge. So I think based on that, the fact that I don't see a compelling reason, I'll be a no vote.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question to counsel is, where did the amendments come from, and why we're not moving them? Were they part of a compromise, or was they part of a compromise between the sponsor of the bill and himself?
The Dash 1 amendments, I believe, were part of an initial compromise between the proponents and Representative Barton.
Representative Barton changed his mind. Okay.
Yes, follow up.
Yes, please.
So who was the opponents?
The proponents, I believe, are Oregon State Bar.
Corporate section.
Thank you, the corporate section.
I was scared that he was bargaining with himself.
Chair, I'll move.
He's not old enough to be doing
it. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2304 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Karen moves House Bill 2304 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any further discussion? Representative Smith.
Can we ask that Representative Barton do take the dais so he can ask the question?
I'm going to give him a break today. No.
Why? You can't build it.
We don't need it.
Is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Representative Smith?
Yes.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Rucker?
Aye. Representative Barton will carry the bill.
Piling on. Great.
You deserve to do that.
Whoop. Part of the committee.
Whoop. 2478? 2478?
Okay, one more. Open the work session on House Bill 2478.
House Bill 2478 modifies the crime of sex abuse in the second degree to include intentionally propelling a dangerous substance at another person. The Dash 2 amendments add the sexual component to that, so it's they intentionally propelling a dangerous substance with the intent to cause sexual gratification. There is a minimal expenditure, and there's no revenue impact.
If the committee recalls this bill, the
they put in the language, they modified it, the sex language, because there was a reporting requirement and it didn't want it to be for something that wasn't a sex crime.
And we do need to adopt the dash two.
And we do need the dash two to adopt the dash two amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
I move the dash twos in the House Bill 2478.
Representative Wisnant moves the dash twos in the House Bill 2478. Discussion. Objection. Hearing none, so ordered.
Oh my God. Andy. Someone record.
Pardon me?
I'll accept the motion.
Chair, I move. Okay. 2478
okay.
Is amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Hero moves House Bill 2478 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Would somebody like to carry the bill?
I think Representative Barton should carry it.
Representative Garrett, will you carry that for us? Okay.
Smith, I hear you carrying a bill here.
Meeting adjourned.